production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax, this is Dofab. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I am Will Anderson. Hello and thank you for watching.
And if you are watching, you'll see that this is one of the now rare episodes where we're not in the same place. We've gone That's back true. To the last few years where we're in different places. You've got 1 week to go on your comedy festival show as we're recording this. How's it been going?
Well, in fact, I only have, when we're recording this, four, I think it's Friday today, so three shows left. So it's almost all over, unfortunately, because I've been having an absolute ball. Luckily, I am going to heaps of other places to do the show as well. But it's been so nice to be in Melbourne. I've been here for the entire festival. So my show was only the last couple of weeks, but I came down for the entire festival. And part of that was that I wanted to go and see a bunch of shows, but I also wanted to say yes to some of the invitations that you get to do other people's shows, and often, you know, you're really jamming them in around your own commitments. So I said yes to a whole bunch of other people's shows. I went back and started doing spots. I did the Festival Club for the first time in 15 years, but I did comedy at the Exford. I've been doing Carl Chandler's late shows. I did Damien Callinan's long form improvised show. I did Osher's improvised news show. Like, I've been guesting at Little Dum Dum Club and
I did spreading faster than COVID.
I did Matt Stewart's podcast. Who knew it was Matt Stewart? I did Brett Blake and Bronwyn Lewis's podcast.
Like, this is an insane work list.
I know,
this is
right?
A year's worth of guest appearances.
I've been to the point where advertising me as a special guest star on your thing is misleading advertising because
you're the Heather Locklear in Melrose Place, podcast guest.
I am the avocado or Chipotle of, well, I was not anywhere and suddenly I was everywhere. I was in everything.
I mean, I got to admit, I was only down in Melbourne for a very short time for our live show, and then we stuck around and did Broden Kelly's footy show. And I must admit, it reignited that. You know, we've talked in the past about, am I really a Melbourne guy anymore? Like, I have not lived there for 20 plus years, and where I live now is could not be more different to Melbourne. But when I was back, I was like, oh man, like, I love this city. Like, and it felt like it was back a little bit to, you know, because they got so smashed during COVID, but the energy and the vibe and the enthusiasm, like a lot of my Melbourne friends and family, you know, I reckon there's just been a bit of a dazed look in the eyes for the last couple of years. Like, they just really went through hell, but I felt like things were changing and turned a corner a little bit this trip.
I could not have enjoyed my time here more. Like, I don't know if I've ever had a month in Melbourne that has just been so filled with, like, I've seen 20 plus shows. I reckon 16 of them.
including the list of shows you've guessed it on. You've also taken have you slept in the last 4 weeks? What is going
Charlie,
on? Charlie. Have you become a meth addict and I don't, this is how I find out about it. Charlie, I don't sleep anymore. I've stretched off all my skin.
Well, here's what I've done. I've stopped watching television. I realized that because I've been on the road, I just haven't logged into anything and I haven't watched anything. And so instead, I've just been going to see live shows instead of, you know, the time you would have spent, you know, watching something on the TV. And I've loved it. Like, there's been so many good shows, so many hilarious comedians, so many friends of our TOFOP extended universe who are doing like their best ever shows, Cam James, like, you know, people like that who we love just doing these brilliant shows. But I also went and saw a musical. I went and saw Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
The Tim Minchin musical, which I fucking loved. And I went by myself. So, yeah, maybe I am. Like, but I've been loving it. It's been so Melbourne. I've been to all of it too. I've been out to Thornbury and, I've been like the Brunswick. I've been to South Melbourne.
That's where it's like, fucking happening too. Yeah. Like, you know, that north of the Yarra, there's a real vibe and a scene up there. Like, a lot of my friends, I got a couple of friends who moved from Sydney. You know, he's a writer, she's an actress, and they moved into a reservoir or just south of Preston.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And I went to visit them and I was like, this is fucking a cool place. Like when I was growing up, like there's nothing out there but newsagents and kind of laundromats and it's where your grandmother lived. But now it's like fucking like boutique this and boutique that and artisanal this and artisanal that. And yeah, you know, still a bit of crime and stuff, but you know, that's part of the character.
Well, I mean, this is what people don't talk about when it comes to gentrification, which is when people are pushed out of their original suburbs, the people who came in and ruined, you know, Fitzroy and Collingwood, like they're partly responsible for making Brunswick cool, right? Yeah. Because the people, the cool people from Fitzroy had to move somewhere else when they couldn't afford to live there anymore. And so it turns out, yeah, so I went, I've been out there a few times because stupid old studios where we went to record Broden's podcast, I've been out there for some other things. And so, yeah, spent a little bit of time out there. So much delightful stuff out. Like, I mean, High Street was just nominated by some magazine as being the coolest street in the world. And there are so many.
That sounds like something a 10-year-old would say. Yeah. High Street was nominated by a magazine somewhere as being like the coolest street in the world. It's like, fuck.
I mean, I know what you're saying and I could not agree with you more, but I'm also going to read you the article from Time Out magazine. High Street in Melbourne's north is officially the coolest street in the world. Now, this is from the 13th of March. This was very recent.
Is the byline written by High Street?
In news that is sure to make every Melburnian swell with pride, it has just been revealed that none other than High Street in the city's inner north has been crowned the coolest street in the world right now. Yes. You read that right. Little old High Street, which weaves through the suburbs of Northcote, Thornbury and Preston, has landed the number one position, stealing the crown from Hollywood Road in Hong Kong, East 11th in Austin, Guatemala Street in Buenos Aires and Commercial Drive in Vancouver, the top five.
This sounds like an Onion article.
This is Time Out Rankings.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to know how they determined the coolest street in the world? To determine the
Hang on, maybe I should try and guess.
Yeah, all right, great.
All right, so there's certain criteria. How many is there a set number of criteria?
Okay, so all right, I'm going to have to read ahead a little bit to work out what it is. So, firstly, who has come up with this what is the group of people, panel, or who do you think that they have got to determine? Oh. This is Time Out magazine.
Well, this would be, I mean, clearly if we're talking about cool, this would be put together by the Arthur Fonzarelli Foundation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The Winklevoss twins.
Okay, so yeah, who's making the decision? Is it is it a collection of like hospitality and tourism, something like that? Like some kind of boards of hospitality and tourism have voted?
It's a global team of Time Out's local expert editors and contributors. So pretty much anyone who writes for Time Out, I reckon.
Yeah, okay. I don't know if we can vet their credentials, right? Okay.
Who each made a case for the coolest street in their city.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Okay. All right. So that's the Melbourne Time Out writer, like arts and culture, what do you call it, nightlife writer, they submitted High Street. And so, okay, well, this is, you know, I'm swelling with a little, on the ones I'm swelling with pride, there's a little bit of movement of pride.
Well, you know what I like? At this point, like even if you've just got a good salesperson, you're in this, right?
Yeah.
Like you could be a cool street with a terrible salesperson or you could be like an okay street but with an awesome salesperson. Yeah.
I would love it if it was like Cavalav. Like Time Out was like submitting Cavalav in Surfers Paradise. Like, and it's just like a great sales pitch. Meet a mate in gold bikinis, full stop. Job
or a
done.
Kappa, you'll meet him. The selection was then narrowed down.
Have you ever found cocaine too hard to purchase? Well, we got a place for you.
Yeah. What are your criteria for what makes something cool? The selection was then narrowed down to create a definitive list of the best avenues, thoroughfares, back streets, and boulevards.
Okay. All right. So that's interesting. So the actual, I wonder if the type of laneway or the street or as a factor, like, you know, hardware lane in Melbourne is quite cool because of just the look of it. I wonder if the aesthetic fits into their assessment, you know?
Well,
High Street
things,
isn't like, I wouldn't automatically think aesthetically that High Street is a particularly cool looking street. It's just a street.
Yeah, it is just a street, but what it has, they've put some of the features of High Street here. This is what you might do if you're going to check out High Street. So you can now, based on this description of what's on offer on High Street, you can tell me whether you think it's the coolest street in the entire world, okay? Craving the best lasagna of your life?
Never. I've never craved lasagna in my life, so I'm probably not the audience for this.
So we've assumed you've said yes. You need...
Well, do not make that assumption. I'm not Garfield. I've never craved lasagna.
Well, you are craving the best lasagna of your life. You need 1-800-LASAGNA on speed dial. Okay. All right. Fine.
No more information than that. Okay. I mean, if I'm assessing this application from the Time Outrider from Melbourne, I'm like, a bit more info.
Well, what about this? Keen to take in sweeping views of suburbia at sunset with spritz in hand?
Fucking no. That sounds awful. Look at some like tiled roofs and hear dogs barking in the local park. No.
Okay, well, the article has once again assumed you've said yes and supplied more information. Head to GG Rooftop, a teeny spot accessible only via an espresso bar. What about that? That sounds pretty cool.
You can go to a
teeny little rooftop and look at the city, but you have to go in through an espresso bar.
Is it a secret entrance? That would make it cool. If it was some kind of like reverse bat pole or something like that, like I slide up a pole, then okay, I'm in.
What about this food? There's a food truck park.
Oh, that sounds – all right, okay. First thing that's actually caught my attention. All right.
Food truck park, boutique indie cinema. What about that? That's not bad.
I think I actually have been to the foodie park and the boutique indie cinema. I think they're near each other, right?
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're winning me around. They're having a vintage fair in that park. And that was the first time I went there. I was like, whoa, that's fucking cool.
A lot of good music. Northcote Social Club, High Note, Shot Kickers. That's pretty cool. I mean, secondhand shops. If secondhand shops it's such an interesting thing, isn't it? Has there ever been like an era in which having a few secondhand shops didn't make the thing a little bit more cool?
No, you're right. It's always been because it's – you know why? Because there is a youth connotation with like a – I'm going to say a thrift store for our American listeners. Yeah, like a secondhand shop, thrift store. It's students, people, you know. Like for instance, there is a – restaurant in my town that is very cool. It's like it's sort of hidden away, almost like a speakeasy, but it's like an Italian restaurant. And the staff in there are so young and good-looking and cool. Like it occupies Gemma and I most of our thoughts most week because we just can't sort of work out where these young, beautiful, stylish people have come from. But it's particularly the wardrobe. You never see the waiters or the waitresses wearing the same thing twice. It's always... they've clearly gone to a secondhand store and accessorized some, like, I don't know, bell bottoms with like an admiral's jacket, you know, with some kind of cool like affectation. Like all of them look like they play like guitar in some kind of New York indie band. But what it sort of signals to us is, because we're like, oh, maybe we could become friends with them. And then I'm like, no, they're young. They don't want to hang out with us. Like their days are spent. They work late in hospitality. Then they probably go out and party for a bit and, you know, kick on at someone's house. And then they spend their days just scouring secondhand stores to look cool and do it all over again.
Yeah. Like not once when we were doing any version of that in our life did we sit around and go, we wish some old people were here.
I know. But we're so deluded because we think we're still cool. Like they would – and because also when they're in the service industry, they're nice to you. And you forget for a second that they're nice to you because –
they're paid to be nice to you.
Exactly. Oh, no, they genuinely are interested in us and our child.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like if the reverse were true, if somebody we'd served in some hospo job when we were starting here, like it just like rocked up to one of our parties and be like, yeah, you brought me like a lasagna the other day from 1-800-LASAGNA, the coolest place on earth. Because, of course, the thing that makes things cool is immediately wanting lasagna.
When was the last time you bought something from a secondhand store?
It's an interesting question. I haven't bought a lot of things in general, like because I've been, you know, traveling pretty light and putting things into storage. It's been more of a
You are talking to at the moment is like talking to the lead character in a sitcom in that your wardrobe is always consistent. You know, like Homer Simpson's always in the white shirt and the blue pants. Like every time I see you, it's like the Jordan hat, the plot plan strategized hoodie, black t-shirt, black pants or shorts if it's a bit warmer. Yeah. But yeah, you're very consistent in your look.
I'm very great for continuity if you want to edit.
Shocking note for me because I've been uploading clips to YouTube. And it's like every time I'm looking for a thumbnail, I'm like, I can't use Will because it looks like exactly the same fucking clip every time. What I do is I scrub through the video until you're doing different expressions. So if someone goes to the Tofop YouTube channel, it's not going to look like just seven identical thumbnails.
Well, the weird thing is even with being on tour, so I've got a couple of suitcases full of stuff, but I'm staying in an apartment that has a good washing machine and dryer. So I've really just been turning over so I haven't even been rotating what it is of the small amount of stuff that I have. I actually have more range in my wardrobe than I have even been. Because I just am like, well, if I've got to wash it anyway, and then I'm like, why would I put it away when I need something to put on anyway?
I think it's also a getting older thing. Like at least, I mean, for me, Gemma is still, you know, she loves clothes and loves buying clothes and has an expansive wardrobe. But I have found that as I've gotten older, my wardrobe has... Well, it's also living up in the Northern Rivers. Like I don't need jackets, don't need suits, don't really need anything like that. But also my interest in buying more stuff is like Gemma literally had to hold me at gunpoint last year to tell me to buy new clothes because she said like that stuff you've been wearing. You know what it was? We got this photo album printed. We got all our photos of Iona in her first 3 years and you can send it off to a place and they print you a photo album. And we were looking through it and Gemma was like, you're wearing the same clothes in every photo and you're wearing the same clothes now. It's like you have to buy something new. That's what got me into Muji and Uniqlo.
Well, you know the funniest thing for me is I feel like an alien who's finally been brought back to their own home planet because when it comes to my fashion, everywhere but here it doesn't make sense. Like everywhere else I have lived, the fact that I wear just layers of black shit is actually really impractical for the, you know, the lifestyle that I've been living. Whereas like when I come back to Melbourne, it's so funny. I just walk out in my normal clothes and I'm like, oh my God, everyone's dressed like me. I belong here. This is
you're what- fucking Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Like, think about it. The story of Jonathan, you know, he's off doing cartwheels and stuff and all the other seagulls like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Just fly like a normal seagull. Yeah. And then he finally flips into a new reality where all the other seagulls are flipping and stuff. Like, you were in Melbourne. You didn't realize it. You got out. You've been out of Melbourne so long, you were just fucking flying with all the normal seagulls. But now you flip back into, you're loving comedy. You're loving, like, traveling around north of the Yarra. You're wearing black. Like, this is, it's here. You found it. Welcome. I mean goodbye.
Sometimes though, it is one of those things where I'm like, why have I been denying myself who I am?
You are. Like I want you to step out of the closet, Will, and embrace who you are.
I am this.
I mean, step out of that closet that is filled with identical black and embrace who you are.
It's so funny because I'm like, of course I'm having a good time. It's like all the things that I like are here at the moment. You know, on Monday night, the comedy festival ends, I'm going to a footy dinner, you know. I've been having so many, like I'm staying in Richmond at the moment and I've never spent much time in Richmond, but man, it's so convenient to the city and I've been walking into my show every night and you just walk across essentially past the MCG and then down by the water and then
like
through
the lyrics of a Paul Kelly song.
Yeah, like through the Fitzroy Gardens. So it's basically just garden the whole way. Is you just like this nice walk into town, go to a big, beautiful theater, do a show, like walk through the city. I mean, you forget that idea of like Melbourne, the city too, like the, you know, particularly when the festival's on and the city is alight, but it's not just the festival, like that huge like population that lives in the inner city of Melbourne, that city really has a heart and a heartbeat and a nightlife that is, that end of where it all used to be like the sex shops and stuff, but now is all like the kind of like very much Chinatown is like morphed into that modern Asian influence and the boba teas and the like fancy ice creams and the all that sort of stuff. And then that's become really hip down there. It's just, yeah, I'm definitely having a Paul Kelly style renewed love affair with like being in Melbourne. I've really had like a lot of like proper Melbourne experiences and they've all been pretty good. I've enjoyed them.
What's been the most kind of obscure or repurposed eatery that you've been to? I'll give you an example of mine first. So when we were last down in Melbourne to see the Pink show, my sister organised breakfast with a few family members and it was in the city and it was like it was that classic thing of like literally going down an alleyway having to like push a brick wall, wall swings around. And then you went up and it was an old Leatherworks. So you're going up these rickety stairs, which would not pass any kind of fire inspection. And then you walk in and there's like a giant kind of sewing machine used to pierce leather. And you step through that and it's just like the old, like an old timey, like Western bar, just like hardwood floors and rickety chairs and stuff like that. And there's some hipster there, you know, barista making coffees and stuff. And I remember, cause it was really cool and but so unusual and like what is this place Iona was wearing her Elsa from Frozen dress and at one point, you know, a very cute thing, the waitress put on Let It Go and the hipster barista like it, he had no time for it. We got through the first like 15 seconds. He didn't care that there's a little kid like dancing around a little Elsa dress. He's like nah, we're not having that in this because it's not part of the aesthetic, the Melbourne aesthetic.
I love that vibe. And when I was on High Street, I reckon
the vibe that hates children and doesn't want them to have a good time.
I reckon every second one on that, like on High Street. I think that's part of, they did not write that in the article, but part of what makes High Street cool is like a couple of Willy Wonka style murder, some children like establishments. But Richmond, the interesting thing about Richmond is I didn't realize that they've just decided in Richmond people like a banh mi and so every shop should be a banh mi. like it is the banh mi district. I've had like 10 different banh mis. I'm like, it seems such a weird idea that there would just be so many places in one area that sell banh mi, but it is honestly like that Simpsons joke about the hammock district. I feel like I'm in the banh mi district and every single one has like its own distinguishing feature. So this is the one that does the fried egg one, or this is the one that does the fake chicken, or this is the one that, and so you've got to like try every single one to see what their signature roll and their signature banh mi is.
I can't. Like banh mi's, I would never get. If you told me, like you're sending me to prison, but you said, and we're only going to give you banh mi's the rest of your life, I'd be like, oh, that's all right. This is good. I'm good with this sentence. I've never had a bad banh mi. I like them all. And I've even been to, when I was doing Getaway in Vietnam, there is the banh mi shop that Anthony Bourdain dubbed the best banh mi in the world. And I had a crocodile banh mi and they cut it out of the final end of the episode. I thought I made such a great joke where I said, I'm Australian, I've heard of Crocodile Dundee, but never a crocodile banh mi. The cameraman laughed and I thought that's definitely getting in, but it didn't.
Probably because the cameraman laughed.
Yeah. Fucking busted. But yeah, no, banh mi's, man, like especially if you get the right creamy cheese spread is just the absolute best.
Well, so this is, you would love, I mean, you should be moving to Richmond. Now I am like working for Tourism Melbourne. I'm getting people to visit.
But we finally got a sponsor.
Yes. I've been bought off by Big Banh Mi. It is, I didn't realize there were so many ways you could do a banh mi.
Mm.
Like I'm not sure, I didn't realize there were so many ways you could spell banh mi because it turns out I'm now confused about, how would you spell banh mi? When you went to the Anthony Bourdain banh mi, how did they spell it there?
Is it B-A-H-N-M-I or is it B-A-N-H? I think it's B-A-H-N, banh mi. Why is that?
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. In my local area, I've seen at least three different versions. Oh. I've seen the B-A-H-N. I've seen the B-A-N-H. I've seen me spelt differently, M-E and M-I.
All right. I guess one's phonetic and one's – okay, so according – let's see. There's no Wikipedia entry for Barn. Oh, no, there is. Here we go. Barn me. B-A-N-B-A-N-H-M-I. Barn me.
Yeah, that's what I would have gone with too, I think.
I'm just seeing if there's any derivations, terminology. The word barn mi is derived from barn, which can refer to many kinds of food, primarily baked goods, including bread, and mi, which means wheat, baked wheat.
Mm.
No, not baked wheat, sorry. Baked goods, I'm misinterpreting that. So just wheat, because barn means many foods, it's wheat. It can also be spelled B-A-N-H-M-Y in northern Vietnam, so barn mai. Yeah. Taken alone, banh mi means any kind of bread, but it could also refer to the Vietnamese baguette or the sandwich made from it. To distinguish the unfilled bread from the sandwich and fillings, the term banh mi cong, plain bread, can be used. So, okay. K-H-O-N-G.
Okay.
Sorry, I stopped talking because I started looking at the photos of the Wikipedia. And I started saliving at lunch yet, and it's like, fuck, they look good.
Well, I don't know if this is a culturally appropriate thing, but I love a fried egg banh mi as like a morning
breakfast,
like
roll.
Like a sort of like, you know, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, like, because like made with all the regular ingredients of banh mi, so it's got that salad-y like vibe, but just with like fried eggs, it's so good. Highly recommend.
I could imagine. And the thing about some banh mi places, the ones where they do the bread, I mean, I think most of them do, but the especially the bakers where they do the bread fresh, if you can time it like early morning, sounds like you've been doing, and you get a fresh bread roll, like that is nothing fucking better. Like it's honestly.
Should we just stop the podcast and go get banh mi?
I'm not even kidding. Like I'm having trouble speaking because my saliva ducts are overflowing into my cheeks. I'm like fucking Homer Simpson. I've been doing intermittent fasting and this is a bad day to have not eaten anything all day.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have one of those fried egg banh mi. Can I tell you this one more Melbourne story, just while we're like reminiscing about Melbourne, because we had another thing that we really did want to talk about, but it is Melbourne related anyway. Yeah. So I think this is actually good. It like gives people – anyway, we'll get to it in a sec. But this morning I've gone to catch up with Amy Ruffle. Some people might know
Amy. I'm friends with Amy.
So Amy and I went to grab – breakfast at just like a cafe that I hadn't been to before. And so this is – okay, so let's do a little bit of – you can guess who the celebrities I saw.
Oh, okay.
In one – this is just while I was sitting there in the cafe, I have managed to see 8 – I'm going to say 8 – people celebs. That you would genuinely say are celebrities, all media related, all vaguely in our world. A lot of them that you probably would have met, some of them that you probably wouldn't have met, but they're all like, I mean, I'll give you the clue that they're all kind of like comedy or radio or in our world sort of related.
Sure.
But like all of these were just random occurrences that just happened to be.
Where was the cafe?
So in Richmond.
Okay.
And it's little hidden off the beaten track little cafe.
All right. First two names I'm going to pop out.
You're just going to say something.
Carrie Bickmore, Tommy Little.
Okay. So I will give you, based on that really good guess, I'm going to give you a really great clue, which is two of them were radio teams. So you're right in your guessing. So
And is
two separate radio teams happen to be there.
Okay. Hamish and Andy.
Okay. Not Hamish and Andy, but like in the style of Hamish and Andy, I would say.
Okay. Dave Hughes and Kate Langbrook.
Think a little bit younger is what I'm saying, but more in the stuff, more inspired by Hamish and Andy.
Matt and Alex.
Okay, you're around. you're getting closer. Who came after Matt and Alex on Triple J?
I don't know.
Ben and Liam. So Ben and Liam were doing. You don't know them. They did Triple J Breakfast. And then they did Nova Breakfast. And they
sorry, were doing Ben and Nova, Liam. I'm sure you did great work.
They were doing Nova Breakfast in Melbourne, Ben, Liam and Bell. So they, the three of them were there. Now, you might not then know who does the national drive show on KISS. Do you know who does the national drive show? Will and Woody. Do you know who Will and Woody are? Okay. So this is just an age thing. These are the people who would have been inspired by Hamish and Andy. They were the next generation on. They're the now the
– How do you know who they are?
Because I do publicity for all my TV shows. They're the ones who have all the radio shows now. Yeah, we're all old. Like when you say Hamish and Andy, Hamish and Andy have been doing a podcast for a decade. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true.
Other people have been doing their jobs in the meantime. So all of these people that I've mentioned, okay, so we're going to get into areas now where I'm confident we've knocked five of them over.
Okay, great.
We've got three left, I think, of the celebrities, right?
Now are we moving
now? We're in big time.
Okay.
Like, proper identities. So,
okay. Away from radio now? Or
one is a radio star, but also known as a comedian in all facets of his life, of the caliber, like a proper Australian. Melbourne, we were in Richmond, probably should give it away. Yeah. Who's the most Richmond?
Mick Molloy.
Mick Molloy, yes.
I thought he lived in Sydney. Oh, isn't he doing Sydney breakfast?
He does it from Sydney every morning, Charlie, of course. He absolutely does from Sydney every morning. Every single morning, Mick Molloy is in Sydney, Mick Molloy. And how does he shoot the front bar from Melbourne? I don't know. It's amazing. But he definitely does his radio show every day from Sydney. You know who else does? Dave Hughes. Why would I even bring that up? They both definitely do their radio shows from Sydney every day.
All right, who's next?
Okay, who would Mick Molloy, someone that Mick Molloy works with?
Yeah.
Collaborates with?
Another comedian?
Definitely does comedy, but maybe wouldn't call himself a comedian, but he's also football related.
Oh, Titus O'Reilly.
Titus O'Reilly. So yeah, Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly.
They have a podcast together. So
they
that
have
makes
a
sense.
Podcast together. Exactly. So
were they doing the podcast?
No, but I believe it was. They were having a little podcast meeting.
Okay.
And then somebody who is an iconic Australian comedy character.
Okay.
I mean, well, this person was there. The person who plays this iconic Australian comedy character.
Okay, so let me reel off some iconic Australian comic characters. So, well, you had Mary Custis, you know, It was Mary Custis.
Yeah, there you go. Well done. It turns out that Mary Custis's, her husband's brother. Anyway, some very close relationship. I think it was Mary's brother or her husband's brother owned the cafe that we were at.
Oh, like, right.
Yeah, so.
Was it called Acropolis now?
Yeah, she was working, Mary. She was dressed as Effie. It was the whole team. It's real fun.
It's like a terror.
Don't you think that's a lot of, like, just in a random cafe?
Yes.
Just to randomly bump into all those people within like an hour when I was sitting
That
there.
Sounds like an that's like an LA story,
yeah.
Like in terms of the concentration of celebrities, which got me wondering, like, why? Like, do they live near there? Is there like a radio station near there? A TV? Like what's going on?
Okay, if I had to put it all together, Mary's there. This is my like end of glass onion style. Yep. If I was going to have to.
Can you do the accent? Well, I do declare, you had six celebrities in this here cafe.
You can do the accent. Okay. I'll give you the information. I think that Will and Woody work up the street. Their radio station is up the street. That's why they would have been there. On the outdoor of this cafe, it turns out, there is a huge Melbourne-style mural, you know, one of those like full wall-style murals of Will and Woody kissing each other that was done by a local artist. So I did not see that at the time. It was since sent to me. So you got the big so they're there because their radio station's down the road.
Okay.
I believe that Liam and Bell and Ben were just having a catch-up, a meeting of some kind with Will and Woody.
So not only did you see the celebs, but you saw three teams. Or like two teams and at least two guys who work together on a podcast.
It was like an Avengers movie or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's really It's unusual. Like, you know.
Well, it's a lot of connections. It does feel like one of those murder mysteries in that you've got the various, like, collections of, like, characters. You've got – because actually what you've introduced to this, Charlie, is technically – did I see something I shouldn't have seen? Now, people from different radio stations are allowed to be friends, but Liam, Ben, and Belle, they all work at Nova. Will and Woody work at a different radio station, right?
It's unusual.
Right. It's unusual they'd be meeting up, but Ben and Belle and Liam have just recently moved from breakfast to night times. Is there something going on? Were they having a meeting of the minds? Are they looking
into intel sharing?
Oh, my God. And then, yes, then you've got the team up of Mick Molloy, who is in radio, but he's there with his podcast partner. I'm there, a podcaster myself. And then
something's going on.
And then you've got Effie. You've got Australian comedy icon Mary Kustis, who I meet her husband there. He's in advertising. He's got a connection to me because one of our initial Gruen guests back in the day worked at the agency. It's all connected, Charlie.
There is a connection.
And it's all connected at this cafe that I had never been to before this morning. But I'll tell you what, I will be going back to because the food was delicious. And also, I mean, how about that? That was that could be the greatest, like, just collection. Random occurrence of.
Yeah, definitely. Just in terms of randomness, like obviously you get people together for other events or like you might see a bunch of celebs in the
completely
VIP
random
at the race.
The only two that were there because of each other, it seemed, were Will and Woody and Belle, Liam and Ben. I think they were there to meet each other. But none of the others who were there.
If your life was the Truman Show, right?
Yeah.
So every interaction you have was engineered for some purpose, to either influence you to make a certain decision, to create greater drama for the audience, or, you know, whatever it is, to derail something. It's Christos, right? Is the producer from The Truman Show. He calls the show. What is Christos designing for Will Anderson by creating that scene? Like, he knows that you know who all those people are. He knows that they're at sort of different sort of stages of their careers. You've sort of dabbled in all those careers. You've done radio, you do a podcast, comedy. What do you think Christos was hoping to, what kind of reaction was he hoping to get from you? Where was he subliminally trying to influence you?
It's very interesting, isn't it? It's like, it's almost as if the whole thing's been trying to move me back to Melbourne. There's a new season of The Truman Show. And they want to change the environment, and they want to, like, they've got to convince me to. So all these great experiences I've been having for the last month have all, I mean, it does actually seem unlikely now that I'm saying this out loud that I have been invited to a Bulldogs coterie group. And on Monday night I'm having dinner with, like, the coach of the team and, like, the captain. That actually feels very Truman Show-y to get me to come back to Melbourne. And, like, and then I've had all these great experiences at the comedy festival. That feels very much like, you know, I'm seeing all my friends. I'm seeing these great shows. Like, I mean.
It makes sense.
This idea that this is kind of he's about to go, like, it's the final weekend of the festival. We've got to kind of, like, show, we're going to get him to this cool. And, like, Amy Ruffell, like the wonderful Amy Ruffell, feels like the perfect character you'd introduce into this, because I don't know her that well. We were catching up to have a chat about, you know, her improv stuff in Melbourne, and, like, you know, she spent some time in LA and stuff. But it was kind of a bit of a, you know, a chance thing to be led to this particular cafe on this particular day to see all these things. But I'm going to take
her. She's a master improviser as well.
The perfect person you would get for something like this, because The Truman Show is basically a giant thank God you're here. And she's got that this is a thank God you're back here. This is a Working Dog production. Am I in a Working Dog? Am I the central character in a Jury Duty style Working Dog to get me to move back to Melbourne? And this has been the final part. Because I'm going to take this even a step further, Charlie. What did I do last night? So I've told you that I've gone to see a whole bunch of shows. Just in an unlikely coincidence, what show did I go and see last night?
Okay. Well, it wasn't Groundhog Day.
No, it wasn't Groundhog Day. Although it wasn't Groundhog Day. It was more directly connected to what I've just told you.
Okay. So it was a stand-up show.
It was a show of one of the people who was at the cafe.
Oh, so it was Amy's stand-up show. The improvised. No. Oh, it was. Titus or Mick?
No.
It was Mary Kustas doing Effie live on stage?
Yes.
What? Really?
Yes. Last night at the Art Centre, myself, Geraldine Hickey, Nath Valvo went to see Effie do Up Yourselfness, her show, as part of the Melbourne Comedy Festival.
Okay.
This feels something, like this is something, isn't it?
This is something. It's so, like, I mean, if you are all woo-woo, you're like, life is giving you a sign, or like, oh, I keep, the glitch in the matrix or whatever. Like, it is, that's unusual. Oh, that's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Or if I was going to take the QAnon approach, I'd be like, something fucking Dan Andrews is up to something.
Oh, yeah, it's Dan. It's bloody Dan Dictator Andrews. Dan trying to get people back to Victoria.
That's right, from his bunker, like he's still controlling the government. He's like,
You know what it is.
Melbourne used to be the comedy capital of Australia.
Yeah, or is it the sort of thing of, is this a kind of final destination thing? So, because... in the movie Final Destination, they cheat death and then death hunts them down. Well, remember that I left Victoria on April 1, 2020, which was just before shut down.
Dan Andrews has orchestrated a conspiracy to lure you back to Melbourne in order to then lock you down for the duration of time that everyone else went through that you escaped.
I've been final destination.
On that, we will get back to Melbourne because we want to talk a bit about the live show we did.
Yes.
But this if we're talking conspiracy theories, we had a little break. We had a little stuttering start to the show, and so we took a little break. And I went outside to get my mail, and I have a neighbour on my street who is very deep into QAnon, and she handed me this leaflet, which is the heading says "Meet your new doctor," and it's a very scary Photoshop.
Oh.
Of a sinister-looking doctor holding a needle, like he wants to give you a jab.
Yeah.
And it says, meet your new doctor. His name is Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus. I'm probably mispronouncing that. He is the head of the World Health Organization.
Oh, yeah.
And it says, despite having zero medical qualifications, he's about to become the arbiter of your health and your family's health for the rest of your life. So I jumped online in our little break just to check if he had no medical qualifications. Turns out he's quite qualified as a doctor.
I would be surprised if you could rise to that position without a medical qualification.
Yeah. Renowned as sort of lowering the AIDS epidemic in Ethiopia by a significant margin on his journey towards World Health Organization. So it says here, he's the former health minister and foreign minister of Ethiopia. He was chosen by the Chinese Communist Party in the United States to run the World Health Organization. During COVID-19, he only had advisory authority. His advice proved disastrous. Okay. Well, first of all, he said he's only advisory. So should we really be going after him if he's only advisor? Like someone else had to actually make the policy decisions.
It's all advice. Like this is an advisory body, the World Health Organization.
If we don't stop them before, I'm assuming the World Health Organization, before May 27, 2024, all of us will be surrendering our personal medical freedom and national sovereignty to Dr. Tedros. No before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't need to say no. That's not happening. I'll say no to that happening because it is not going to happen.
There's a couple of websites I won't link to description.
Well, here's what I would say though, is like, how common do you think that is up your way still? Because I was talking to somebody who knew, we had a mutual friend from up there, and this mutual friend's always had a bit of woo-woo around them, you know, like that's, you know, their vibe, and that's okay. Nothing wrong with a little bit of harmless woo-woo. But anyway, I'll just tell you the thing and you can make your own decision about how you want to judge this or otherwise. But they had told my friend that they were currently in a polyamorous relationship. That feels like the new thing up in that part of the woods. But they were not having sex with vaccinated people. So that was...
I mean, what do I think of that? Well, no. Well, sure. Yeah. How do you... Okay. Are you checking all the health medical records? Because I mean, if you're going to impose or ask someone about the vaccination status, that is their own personal medical history, do you want to check off a few other things while you're also asked? Just make sure you're being a completionist. Just a few other sexually transmitted diseases you want to ask about at the same time?
I mean, anyway, it's just such a interesting perspective on... Like even just that
attitude definitely does feel. I mean, I would say the majority, and look, I'm just garnering off people that I've spoken to. There's not a lot of it on the street. I think probably proportionally to wider society, like it's still people who are who aren't kind of conspiracy theorists are the dominant. But anytime there is a post put on like a community Facebook page or whatever that has to do with vaccines, or what was it? The last one I saw was. Oh, someone was sort of talking about how tourism has been slow up this region lately. You know, it's probably the quietest it's been in a long time. And someone said, innocently, well, COVID probably, you know, there was a big influx to Byron during COVID because people couldn't go anywhere else. But now the world's opened up and people are going other places. But the mention of COVID, the next comment was, and also, you know, all the people who got the jab and, you know, are now fucked and blah, 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 blah. And it was like, okay, all right. I mean, it's become a real delineation point. Like it's a way you virtue signal in your status is, are you unvaccinated? And if you are,
those
you a sheep or not a sheep?
Those protesters are still going in Melbourne. And like I saw them the other night and there was like 11 of them. And I'm right. That's not me like, that's not me being mean. I counted them. There was literally 11 of them on the protest. And I was like, oh, well. I mean, I kind of actually like that they still get to protest. Like there is actually part of me that's like, oh, well, you know what? Like, I mean.
Everyone needs a cause.
Yeah. Like, but it's kind of. If they want to walk through the streets and hold their sign about vaccines, then that's okay.
Well, I think that there is definitely that kind of really angry. There's a lot of anger and hurt about, you know, people who were locked down or people who felt they were denied employment because they wouldn't get vaccinated and they felt that they were being ostracized for whatever reason. But I also think that it's part of this kind of this echo chamber social media bubble we live in now where we only want to hear the news that agrees with our worldview already. And so to kind of maintain the rage of that, you need to keep the boogeyman strong and you know what I mean? Like come up with new, like you got to keep it fresh. So when there's a new story about, you know, a young person having a heart attack or whatever, like it's a really good way to kind of just keep the boogeyman alive and thriving. But I'd say for the majority of people, it's kind of they've moved on or at least it's not as big an issue.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that because it's such a beautiful part of the world like that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to get a laundry list of fucking things I love like you've been doing because whoever's operating my life is they've run out of ideas.
Same. He seems happy with this. Yeah. This little birdie seems happy dipping his beak in the little water. Yeah. You just do this every day. Dip your beak, little birdie.
The Charlie Show has gone into syndication. Yeah, reruns only.
Just like it's comforting. We like this. We just like that it's the same every day. You know, it's reliable.
We did want to talk about our live show that we did in Melbourne because that was part of the Melbourne experience. That's the reason I was down there. First of all, thank you to everyone who came out and bought
much
a ticket.
Fun.
It was really great. And we got the audience involved. We asked for some questions. We had some great questions submitted. But it was that space, the Basement Comedy Club, Carl's Room in Melbourne, it feels perfectly calibrated for what we do.
Yes.
Don't you reckon? Like the vibe of the shows. And, you know, you sort of spoke after we did the first one of live shows in the last year about, oh, I wonder if we could just do this on stage. And I sort of feel like we're getting to that point. Like it sort of, it felt like TOEFL.
I agree. It just felt loose and fun and it was whatever it was. And we just followed rabbit holes and we just, you know, like had half an idea and then just pursued it relentlessly, you know, in, and I think that is, I mean, I think it's really fun to do. I think the audience really responded to it. There's something quite special about the fact that even that we didn't do that show, like we didn't sell a second show. You know, there is an idea that the hardcore fans get diluted, you know, by the more shows that you do, right? But basically we just gathered the most hardcore fans all together in the one room and it was like drinking straight TOEFL cordial, you know?
I mean, we just 5 minutes ago railing against people in echo chambers in the bubbles. It's like we like to create our own
space. You can be in your own entertainment bubble. Like it's bloody great when you go to your favourite artist and they do the thing that you love that they do.
That's true, yeah. Shut up, play the hits.
Yeah. Like, you know, the hardcore fans and like, but that also that group gives us that permission to, you know, to take it to whatever weird and wonderful place that it's going to be. And they understand that the mess of it is kind of the show at the same time. But I loved it. I just thought it was so funny. Like John Deeks and Osher and just like the energy in the room and even just the technical malfunctions of microphones and all sorts of things that we just managed to fully embrace as part of the like to me that felt like, you know, the Brian Jonestown Massacre experience. You know, you want to see them fight each other. You don't want to see them play songs.
Well, if you want to hear the episode, it's in the Everyone Relax feed. It came out last week. So if you want to go back and listen to it before you listen to us talk about it, because there are some things about the show that I did want to talk about, including like that microphone fuck up that happened. There was, because I'd put the call out for the questions. And so when all the questions came in, I was trying to work out like, oh, how many do we do? And then I sort of had this idea of, oh, well, now that Osher's available and John can be there, it might be fun to do this kind of like competing, like, you know, the legendary TV host and the young hotshot trying to take his spot. And I thought, oh, that'd be a fun dynamic. And they can do 10 questions each. That way it's like 20 questions. And so that was my plan. And then we get into the show. And, you know, we bring John up. And I think it was just as Osher was coming on stage, the mic's fucked up. And so then you're off stage, you know, trying to sort that out. And John and Osh start burning through the questions as if it's like a fucking speed run. Because in my head, I was like, oh, this will be great. Like, we'll sit down, someone will ask a question and then we can just toss it around for a bit and that'll be 2 to 3 minutes, you know, a question. Or, you know, maybe we just like stop down on one and we do like 20 minutes. But they're fucking firing through the questions. And I'm like, I need to stop them. Like, I've got to stop. A, you went on stage to answer them, and B, like guys, just like slow down. And so I just had to put a kibosh and just jump on one of the questions and be like, oh, wait, why don't we really think about this question? Why don't we slow this down? John, I'd like to hear your thoughts. Around about 2 minutes worth of thoughts of answer, if you could.
I mean, look, it did fall apart, but I love the idea that, I mean, the falling apart is the thing, right?
Well, that's what I think.
The show is the falling apart. Like seeing what happened and like our best laid plans go astray and then that becoming the actual show is kind of what it is that we do. Like I think the most successful live shows, but I think just the most successful shows in general are when we're trying to achieve something and then fail, but then in the failure achieve something else that was better than the original thing that we were trying to achieve. Colin, TOEFL.
And we weren't sure we meant it, but we're glad you like it. TOEFL.
Yeah, TOEFL. Beautiful mistakes.
So the good news is that we're going to be doing more live shows. So, you know, we've spoken to Carl and we've set up some dates going forward. We'll announce those soon. But it's really worth getting into it, coming and getting your tickets early. We may even look at doing like, I don't know, like a bulk deal or something like that. So
yeah. You know, if we can, like if it's not too hard to do, but like, so it looks like what we're going to attempt to do, and this is like, there's still some moving parts of this, so don't hold us to it, but what we're attempting to do is that we probably will do three monthly shows in Melbourne, like, yep. you know, so, you know, three so shows
a,
over
a
3 months.
Shows a month, yeah. A show a month for 3 months.
One show per month for 3 months, yeah. So, you know, we might be able to look at some way of selling a, you know, ticket to all three if that is the sort of thing that you'd like to do. I think we should at least explore whether that is a possibility.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they'll be completely different shows. And then we'll take a little break for some other things and then hopefully come back and maybe do some more after that, depending on how well the first ones go. So it might be something that we end up doing a whole bunch of monthly shows, you know, over a longer period of months. But at the start, it looks like it'll probably be three shows over 3 months. And then based on yeah. how they go, we'll get an indication of whether we will do some more.
Yeah. So Melbourne only at this stage, but with yeah. an eye of like doing more stuff in more cities, we're just sort of, we're just getting out, what do you think? Getting our legs underneath this, I guess. Just trying to.
Sure.
Yeah. Is that a
yeah?
What's
I mean,
what's
yes.
a stage? Well, no, what's a comedy? What do they say when you're like working a show up? Working a show up? When you're just getting stage time, stage minutes?
Yeah, we're getting some stage time. We're getting some bloody. You know what we are? It's TOEFOP. It's back in the clubs, Charlie.
Yeah,
like that's like right, I yeah. have been during this comedy festival. We're now taking TOEFOP back to the clubs. We're going to work it out on the underground.
Yeah,
and then we're going to bloody take it out on the mainstream. Or I was just to ever be on the underground, ignored by people.
That's right. We're going to be like we're going to be so underground that people are going to be like, we like their old stuff better than the new stuff. And you're like, no, you definitely don't know what TOEFOP is then.
You don't like
no
their
one
old
likes
stuff.
The old yeah. stuff. All right. So that is TOEFOP for this week. Thank you to everyone who supports on the Patreon. That is still the number one way you can support this show. Lots of great bonus content goes up there, bonus episodes, Foz Dyke's artwork, heaps of great stuff there. That's Patreon.com/EveryoneRelax. I've got to remember to do that. And you can find all our podcasts at EveryoneRelax.co. Do you have anything to plug in 2 weeks?
I'm just on tour. So, yeah. You know, look, Brisbane, Sydney, Perth, probably still at this stage, but then a whole bunch of regional dates as well. They're all at comedy.com.au.
Okay. That's TOEFOP for this week. I'm Charlie Clawson.
Well, let me see.
Listener.